The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul. Welcome to the program. Our guest is Alex Robinson, co-founder and CEO of Juniper Square, a company that creates technologies for the real estate industry. And that is exactly what we're here to talk about, real estate and technology, including the industry's long aversion to technology and its slowness in adopting it. Alex Robinson started his career at Microsoft and later founded New Energy Risk, which provided data analytics and other information services to the renewable energy industry. And that organization was acquired by XL Capital in 2015. And here he goes again with a new entrepreneurial venture at Juniper Square. Alex Robinson joins me by phone from San Francisco. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Excited to be here with you today.
Glad to have you. So let's talk about the elephant that's been in the room for a long time, although I think it's been shown the exit or is in the process of being shown the exit, and that is, why has the real estate business been so slow to adopt technology over the years?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. If you look across sort of the full landscape of the alternative sector, I think you can clearly say that, you know, as compared to hedge funds, for example, or even the broader buyout or growth private equity industries, real estate has definitely been a laggard. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint exactly why. I think certainly one issue, and I guess we're talking our own book a little bit here, but honestly, the technology that has been available, it hasn't been great. The real estate industry has been underserved from a technology perspective for quite a long time. It's not to say that tools haven't been available. It's that the tools haven't been available that have been really thoughtfully designed for the people who are going to use them. And so the technology ends up being sort of 80% there or 60% there or something like that. And I think one of the challenges is if in your work you have a tool that doesn't really get the job done, you probably just don't use the tool, right? And you fall back on the tool that does get the job done, which is Excel. And so I think that is definitely a contributing factor. It's just the technology available hasn't been great. And if you look at, say, the hedge fund industry, there have been a number of technology providers, large technology providers, that have built businesses serving that industry. And real estate certainly has its share of big software providers, but I think there's a lot of room for growth there. I think another issue is that, you know, the value chain in real estate can be really disjointed, right? I mean, you could be vertically integrated, you can be doing your own property management, you can be a local operating partner to a private equity firm, you can be just in the investment management business. And so all of these different slices of the value chain can either be sort of wholly owned by one firm or apportioned out to different players. And so coordinating technology among different providers, among different players, is always really difficult to do. And so I think this is a contributing factor. And then maybe, you know, the third one that comes to mind is just a lot of the leaders in the real estate industry today, the folks who've built really big, established investment firms, maybe themselves aren't necessarily early adopters of technology. And it's not to say it's good or bad. It's just, you know, these are people who've built their career wearing out shoe leather, right? Not necessarily being the latest adopter of whatever gizmo or gadget comes out. And I think it's still early enough in the cycle, the technology adoption cycle, that there's not a lot of really clear signs of competitive advantage of firms that are investing in technology and outperforming in the market. I think that will change, by the way. But, folks could be forgiven for looking out and saying, well, you know, whether I adopt technology or not is not necessarily going to be a driver of business outcomes. Whereas compare that to the hedge fund industry, right, where I think you just couldn't make the same claim, right? You can't not be an adopter of technology and hedge funds in the way that you can be in real estate.
So why haven't the major software providers, say an Oracle or an SAP, or there used to be PeopleSoft before Larry Ellison ate it alive over there at Oracle, none of them stepped forward and designed programs or in platforms for the industry. And, real estate's a big industry. I mean, trillions of dollars in real estate, built environment and investments and whatnot. Why haven't any of the enterprise software companies stepped forward and decided this is a this could be quite a cash flow stream.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, so I spent a stint of my career working on the corporate strategy team at Microsoft, and so I used to sort of be in the room when we were evaluating questions like this of, you know, should we, you know, extend from being a horizontal software provider to serving some of these vertical industries? And I think an important thing to understand about how these firms like Microsoft and Oracle and SAP think is, you know, while it's true commercial real estate is absolutely a vast industry and tremendous amounts of asset value are managed through the industry, firms like Oracle build software for companies, for organizations. And so in that sense, the unit of measure that matters is how many prospective firms are there in an industry to sell to. And so you look at the history of the technology industry, the B2B technology industry, the first wave of companies that built really big businesses like Microsoft built it by sort of picking off horizontal scenarios that every single business across any industry vertical need. So CRM in the case of Salesforce, let's say, or ERP in the case of SAP, doesn't matter what industry vertical you're in, they've got a horizontal solution. And so when you're in that mindset and you look at markets, you're expecting to see millions of potential firms to sell to. And the reality for real estate is even though it's vast and it feels really big, you know, if you look at the count of firms there are to sell to, it's also very fragmented, right? So you have a lot of really small firms in the market that collectively add up to managing a lot of AUM, but any one firm might not be a very big buyer of software. And so the real estate industry looks more like an industry where there's thousands or maybe tens of thousands of firms that can buy software and not millions. And so when you're these firms, the opportunity cost of your engineering time is so vast that you could just never focus in, you know, narrowly on a specific vertical like real estate. And I think what's changing is, you might say, well, why are you guys focusing on this then? I think what's different is that, you know, when you start out like we are from the outset with a focus on a particular industry, right? So we have, you know, about 200 clients now. Every single one of them is a real estate investment manager. We only serve real estate investment managers. And so we can have this incredibly tight focus on serving our customers' needs and serving their needs really deeply and across a wide range of scenarios. And so, you know, where a firm like Salesforce might be trying to get, you know, $20 per user per month for somebody to use their CRM, we're looking at how can we align our software development capability with our customers' needs and help them create value through software. And when you can do that, you can create a lot more value and then hopefully capture a lot more value. And so the industry starts to look a lot different. And a great pioneer that has really led the way here, not in real estate, but in the pharmaceutical industry, is Veeva Systems, which is a company that builds software only for sort of life sciences, pharma companies. They're now $10 or $12 billion public company pursuing this strategy in an industry where the customers count more like hundreds than even thousands.
Hmm. Interesting. So the sweet spot in real estate that you've identified is the investment manager. What other sweet spots exist within real estate? Is there anything else that is obvious? Is it in property management maybe or development? Are there any other sweet spots?
Well, I mean, I think for us, we see a lot of opportunity in the investment management sort of slice of the industry. And part of the reason for that is, you know, I made the comment earlier that the software tools that historically have been available to real estate haven't been great. But the vast majority of the software providers that exist focus primarily on property accounting. So, you know, if you owned a multifamily apartment building, let's say you own a garden-style multifamily apartment building in, you know, wherever, suburban Dallas, you'd never think of managing that property in Excel and recording all of your leases in Excel and paying vendors out of Excel. You'd use any one of the numerous sort of accounting, property accounting ERP providers, Yardi, MRI, RealPage, Entrata, AppFolio, et cetera. But when you step up from the asset, up from the property to the investment, you could sort of make the similar statement of like, well, why would you ever think about managing that investment in Excel, calculating the waterfall, doing all the partnership accounting, dealing with all of the reporting? And the reason is the tool sets haven't, the tools haven't really been available, and so Excel is sort of what you default to. So we think there's a lot of opportunity in investment management, also because that's a point of significant leverage in the industry. There's a lot of property, accounting firms, property management firms that operate on very thin margins, and their technology budget, so to speak, is very thin, and then the leverage you can get through technology is very thin. Whereas in the investment management space, if you can get an asset management broadly, if you can get an edge through software, and that edge, you know, even if small, can be leveraged across a tremendously large asset base, you can create just a really significant value. And so we think it's a really interesting slice of the market to focus on, but by no means is it the only one. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting innovation going on across the real estate industry. There's sort of, themes to it, right? People are building workflow automation, kind of operations automation tools. People are building tools that help parties collaborate better in the market. So, BTS is focused on brokers and landlords. We're focused on managers and investors. And then I think there's a third category, which is still pretty emergent, but will be really interesting over the course of the next 5 or 10 years, which is technology to help with the investment decisions themselves, right? Evaluation, knowing when to buy, sell, knowing where there's dislocations in the market, et cetera.
So we are looking at some new technologies, frontier technologies, you might call them. There's blockchain, there's artificial intelligence, and then maybe some others coming along that you're aware of that I'm not. So as you think in terms of frontier technologies, what do you see out there, and how are you expecting it to benefit the real estate industry in the years to come?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think the two that you mentioned are really interesting. So machine learning, or a lot of people call AI now sort of a sexier term, but machine learning, I think it's a particularly interesting area, and I think it's really interesting to sort of study the public markets and as a bit of a harbinger of what's to come in the private markets in general and real estate in particular. And certainly, the hedge fund industry, public markets, quant funds, these were some of the earliest adopters of machine learning, and they were trying to do things like, predict, use sentiment analysis to predict earnings surprises, things like that, like trying to understand where there might be dislocations in the price of the stock. And I think where that industry is moving in the public markets is using machine learning to try to understand dislocations in the value of the assets themselves. So how do you know whether a company is appropriately valued or not? And that's actually a better application for machine learning, because machine learning works really well in cases where you have sort of stability in the feature space. And so asset management in particular, we think, is a really interesting area over time for machine learning, in the sense that, imagine if, everybody's pretty familiar with Zillow, right? You can go punch in an address, see the value, an estimated value of your home, and of course it's not as good as if you had sent, one of your star sort of valuation experts out to a property, but maybe it's good to sort of like a 90% confidence interval. And so what that enables you to see is across the entire space of the market where there's dislocations, and that's really interesting. And imagine if you could do the same thing for commercial properties, right, where you could sort of understand across the entire market the intrinsic value of buildings, and you could see whether they were appropriately priced or not, where there are dislocations in the market. So I think that's the promise of machine learning. But what a lot of people, I think, miss is that one of the reasons that the public markets have been early adopters of these technologies is because the data are structured in the industry, all the way down to the portfolio. Each individual company that's a member of the market, their 10K, their K's and their Q's, these have been structured for a long time. So you have years and years of data that you can kind of run this type of analysis on. And in the case of the private markets industry, in real estate in particular, if your source data is Excel, and it's all unstructured, and there is no kind of repository for this data, then you really, you know, machine learning is not a very interesting technology for you. And so we really see it as sort of a two-step approach where the first thing that you have to do is you have to help the industry migrate out of Excel. You have to sort of help the industry migrate into, you know, some sort of ERP system that helps structure the data on the assets, on the investment, on debt, on valuation, on all the kind of attributes that you would need to do interesting analysis using machine learning. But once you've done that, then these applications of technology could be really interesting. So AI machine learning is one, and then I think the other that we're certainly excited about, not in the immediate term, but over the course of a number of years, is the blockchain and crypto. And really, those are just sort of fancy ways of saying a distributed ledger, you know, that sort of a trustless ledger that enables people to transact without all of the legwork of building trust that today's system requires. And I think the reason that's particularly interesting is because of the potential for liquidity that it unlocks in you know, the private markets asset class, which is generally fairly illiquid. And so I think that general concept, it doesn't necessarily have to be the blockchain, but that general concept of how can you create sort of a version of truth, a system of truth that sits in between, you know, the manager of an investment, the investors in that investment, both current and prospective, that would enable some liquidity, and that will be, you know, software that enables this over time. We think that's a really interesting area over the next few years.
Is there any aversion within the real estate industry to technology? Because for a long time, it's really been a people business. It's talking to people, it's showing them properties, it's getting them to agree to certain terms and whatnot. Is it simply a matter of, if you show me a good piece of technology, I'm all over it? Or is there some pushback? You got to take into account that a lot of times people don't like to learn something new. It's working for me now, and I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. And unless my competitor starts to eat my lunch, I'm not sure I need to learn anything new right now or spend what could be a hefty amount of money on a fancy new piece of hardware or software.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And I mean, for good reason, honestly. I mean, I think, you know, if you've been around the real estate industry long enough, you have surely been through the process of being promised some, you know, whiz-bang new technology that was going to sort of solve all your problems. And it was going to take you, you know, 2 months to get it set up and $200,000. And then 3 years later, you're $5 million into this thing. You're still not seeing any benefits from it. And you know, no end in sight. And that's the case all too frequently. I mean, a lot of our customers have gone through projects like that. And so there's a lot of scar tissue, I think, that we have to kind of work through of people being skeptical of the value of technology. And it's just something that you have to work through. I mean, there's sort of a technology adoption curve, and not every firm in the market has to be an early adopter. And I think what happens is, as soon as it becomes clear to others in the industry that those who are adopting early are achieving some sort of significant benefit, then the market can move quite quickly. But you really have to get to that first point of you know, people being able to look out across their peers, see firms who have adopted technology and have some kind of edge in the market as a result, right? Not that they've saved, you know, 0.5% on their back office spend, but they have some sort of competitive advantage that they're using technology to get leverage on. And I think once you start to see that and it starts to become pretty apparent, my guess is that the industry can move quite quickly. Because I do think that, I mean, you mentioned it's a relationship business. It absolutely is. And people are highly influenced by what their peers are doing. I mean, two-thirds of our customers come from referral from our existing customers, and we don't do any kind of referral programs. We don't incentivize this. This is just, you know, people talk, and people are happy to sort of share good ideas with others. And so I think we will see a change, but it will take some time.
So each time I ask you a question, then you start to answer, the sirens go off. So is that a commentary on the quality of your answer? Like maybe it's saying that you're giving me a five-star answer, or maybe it's saying that it's actually objecting to what you're saying. What is it, Alex? Is it?
Yeah, maybe that's like the sensor police pressing the button each time I'm going off track. No, we're in downtown San Francisco in the financial district, and we're on the 14th floor here, but we're close enough to a fire station that this is an all too common occurrence.
Okay, those are fire engines. Okay, I thought maybe some white collar crimes were being committed over there in your neighborhood. And what's next? I wanted to say what's next for Juniper Square, but I think to some degree you answered it. Let me feed this back to you and you tell me whether I understand you correctly. You've got a solution. Let's call it a solution. I hate that term because everybody says they have a solution. But you've got a product that for the investment manager. You also talked about the next great thing would be if it actually can make investment decisions for you, do the analysis, and actually point to the kind of investments that should be made. Is that a product in development at Juniper Square, or are you simply looking to continue to upgrade the existing product that you've got?
Yeah, right. So the short answer is no, not yet. The thing that we're focused on now is, you know, we serve 200 customers, and we want to serve 2,000. And you know, what our software helps our customers do, if they're in the investment management business, they have outside investors, sort of take all of the operations associated with running an investment, from partnership accounting to managing the waterfall to doing fundraising to tracking capital markets relationships to, you know, closing subscription agreements online, that entire sort of aspect of being in the investment management business and automate it through software. And we'd like to get to the point where sort of every kind of business process that can be automated in software is. Because our view is that, you know, what differentiates firms is not how well they do their partnership accounting. I mean, these are kind of commodity things. What matters is the actual real estate investments. And so, you know, our goal is to try and free our customers up to focus on the real estate, and there's a lot of wood for us to chop there. There's a lot to do in kind of fulfilling that promise. As I was saying, these sorts of solutions that we might be able to deliver customers down the road, whether it's kind of the promise of machine learning or liquidity enabled through blockchain or whatever the case might be, these are all interesting technologies that come from kind of helping customers organize their data at scale, right? And that's kind of the first thing that needs to happen. And so that's what we're laser focused on now. And there's plenty to do in that area.
Okay, well, I'm not going to let you go until I get a book recommendation from you, because people think in terms of technology, even people who are not in the business, including myself, find the future to be exciting because there's these various types of technology, whether it's blockchain, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, robotics, it goes on and on. And as people think about the future, I'm wondering if there's any particular book that you have read recently that you think gives a very informed or perhaps exciting or scary sketch of what the future may look like as technology starts to develop and become more pervasive and start to actually pick up an awful lot of the duties that human beings carry out at this time. Is there one you would point to?
Well, you know, there's something that comes to, just given what we've talked about here, there's something that comes to mind that I think might be generally interesting to folks. I think, you know, I go to conferences and I think terms like artificial intelligence, machine learning, we talked about machine learning. There's probably folks listening to this that are scratching their head going, what in the world is machine learning, or why should I even care? There's a resource out on the web called Machine Learning for Humans that I think is a really, if you're interested in this topic and you're interested in just getting to the bottom of kind of what is this technology and what are we talking about, it's sort of like if you understand regression, if you just have a basic understanding of linear regression or multivariate regression, then you will get this and you can understand it. It might be an interesting way to start thinking about how to apply this to your business. So it's not really a book. I think it's like a collection of posts on Medium, actually. But Machine Learning for Humans is one thing I might recommend.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you for that. And I wish you luck, Alex. Yeah, I get the feeling you maybe one of those serial entrepreneurs. You've sold one company. This one maybe will eventually draw the attention of a larger organization, and you might have something else in mind. If you did have an offer you couldn't refuse, what would your next startup be? What in what category would it be? Any idea?
To be totally honest with you, we have had offers to sell our company, and we haven't done so because we sort of feel like we have the tiger by the tail here, and we see a tremendous amount of work to do and a tremendous opportunity to kind of help the private markets modernize through software that's sort of on the scale of work that you do over the course of decades, not years. And so having been around startups before, I know how hard it is to kind of go from a whiteboard idea to a true business. It you know, 9.5 out of 10 don't make it that far. And so I think now that we sort of feel like we have this path of being able to do this kind of work in a really huge market where there's tremendous opportunity, I'm not lying when I say I can't imagine us doing anything else. Like, we have absolutely no intention of selling the company. We think there's a huge opportunity here.
Mm. I like that answer, and I'm wishing you great things, Alex. I appreciate you taking the time to visit with us, and I'm looking forward to us getting together again as this whole thing develops. Thanks for your time.
Me too, Mike. Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it.